La da la me me da me an je ye on ba da an ja jen la so chu je cho la cha wa je ba na ma san je sun ba ra du shi jen te we gyu gyu ba de da je je tam be chu nyen shen nen de je je na mo la ye je da lu da nu jen je du bun da da me ye je nam da do wa gun je chang nam je zang ba tam je je do ta ge chu dun do Good morning. So you are the brave ones. So how was last week? Any opportunity to practice? Feel free to share.
I thought that driving awful road conditions was a good exercise in patience.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you went too fast, or you tried to do any sudden movements, or you got impatient with traffic, you got in trouble. So you had to be patient and just let the trip take as long as it was going to, and recognize it was going to take longer. So I thought it was a good exercise.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, that's good. Thank you.
I think it's also a good exercise in acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
I drive 33 miles each way to work.
Wow.
I have to accept that I'm going to drive very slowly because my goal is to just make it. Safely.
Mm.
So it's acceptance, and I'm still using the meditation.
Mm-hmm.
So that comes in handy for life and whatever life throws whatever situation gets you to really get upset. It's like that driving also, for that long and at night and so forth, I get upset, and then I just bring it down, so that's a very good I'm passing it to as many people as I can, but that's the one that I continue to practice also as I as I'm experiencing my own issues with health, so.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, I think the acceptance is so important.
Yeah,
many times we experience unnecessary suffering because we fail to accept the situation, and we just want to, what is the word? Resist. There's another word. You don't want to acknowledge that. You just want to denial. And another thing is when you have these unrealistic expectations, everything must go perfectly. It must be like this. Thinking in a black and white. So then, we have problem. So it is, we are living in an imperfect world. Definitely there will be ups and downs. So if we have this acceptance that we are in an imperfect world and things will not be perfect all the time, if we have that kind of acceptance when we are challenged, when we face adversities, when we face challenges, we will be more accepting. We will be able to face that challenge. Whereas if you have this kind of unrealistic expectation, so that's the problem. Yeah. So it's very important. You can see in many therapies, acceptance is the first stage. And then you can progress from there. Yeah, thank you. That's a very important point. Anybody?
Really sick for over a week with just a bad fever and cough. I'm not contagious anymore. I'm on antibiotics. But it was a good reminder of how, like, at the time. time of death, how hard it is to practice. I mean, I just had a fever and cough, which is nothing compared to what I might be experiencing at the time of death. And yeah, it's just a good reminder of, like, my mind was so foggy and, you know, it's hard to practice. Mm. I found the one thing I was able to do was do Tonglen.
Yeah, that's very good. Yeah, that's very good. Yeah, that's why we have been talking about human rebirth, how precious it is. We call about we call this leisure and endowment, filled with leisure and endowment. So we have discussed why the beings in the lower realms are not a conducive kind of a life to practice. We can tell from our own experience when we have headache, it is very hard to practice. You don't even want to stand up. So it is very difficult. And imagine those hell beings especially, constantly 24 hours in pain and suffering. So that's why we say that once we are born down there, there is no opportunity to practice. So while we are, while we have this opportunity, we should really, really grab onto this opportunity and do something that will ensure that we have continuous this kind of optimum rebirth. That's good. That's a good reminder. Yeah. Anyone? Okay. If not, today I thought to discuss on this a new concept, self-compassion. I think many of you must be very familiar with this. Is a new term, newly coined term. I think it is very popular in the West. So before we go, I mean, before we discuss on this, I wanted to introduce you something else. ABCD model, commonly known as ABC model. This is to illustrate or corroborate what we have been discussing for the past months. And I have recently showed those clips where how interpretation, how our attitude plays a role. This is to illustrate that point. This is a very popular model in cognitive therapy. It's called cognitive behavioral therapy. So this is from the perspective of cognitive theories. So I like the cognitive theory because it aligns with the Buddhist view that, you know, it is all about your mind. Mainly when they explain about why mental disorders, people have mental disorders, especially depression. So they explain that it is just the distorted view, how you process the event or the stimuli. It is all here. Because you have this kind of irrational beliefs, irrational thoughts, that's why you have these disorders. So it is nothing to do with external things. Directly, I would say. So that's how, I mean, that's why I say that it aligns with Buddhist. We also say that external things are not important. It is how you perceive them. It is how you interpret them. So this is A, B, C, D. In therapy, I think this is very popular, especially cognitive therapy. So what does A, B, C stands for? The A stands for activating event, or sometimes it's they use antecedent. And then B stands for belief, and then C for consequences. So basically it's saying that you need to have a situation or stimuli, and then when something happens to us, then our belief system comes to the fore, that interprets the situation, and then we react. this consequence is behavior, how you act after, how you respond after this. So let's say if somebody, what is the best example? Somebody, let's say somebody comes in and close the door, bang the door, or close the door loudly. That is the activating event. And then, based on the belief system, some, let's say if we, let's say 10 person, seeing that same action of the person, will interpret differently, will have different responses. Some will think that, oh, he is angry. If you have some other incidents there, you will think that, oh, he is doing this for me. He's angry with me. He's showing his anger. But some will say that, oh, he didn't realize that, you know. He wasn't able to judge how much the force. And then, yeah, based on that, you will have all kinds of actions. Some people may shout after the person. So this is what it says, belief system plays a role. And other example I think it's very common is like the blind. We showed the video. We saw the video. And when people first didn't know that that person was a blind man, remember their response, their reaction. They are angry, agitated, and all that. Once they knew that he is a blind person, and automatically that response changes. So that's why we're saying the belief system. Your belief is very important. Everything is up here. So that's why in positive psychology or in many ways, we always promote this positive attitude. You should have a positive attitude. So that's the reason. That plays a main role. Remember, we also listened to this boy saying that, I'm happy that I have this phone. I'm grateful for having this phone because there are other people who are praying to have this kind of phone. Even though the boy didn't have the best phone, the iPhone 10 or whatever it is, he didn't have that. But still, you see the attitude. And I think we saw another clip where showing somebody who was driving this, what was that one? The sports car. Still not satisfied. Desiring for helicopter or something. And then you see all those. They're all attitude, you see. How this attitude plays. But if you have this contentment, then it's different. And another very easy example is your enemies. You label someone as your enemy. But if you are able to bring in between this tolerance or patience, then the consequences will be completely different. There may not be any consequences. Let's say you encounter your enemy and the person says something else, nasty things at you. And your belief system is, oh, he is trying to hurt me, he's my enemy and all this. And then what happens? It may turn into a big fight. Whereas if you're able, there are no point responding to that person. I should tolerate, I should practice patience. Completely different. So you see, event, activating event is same. Same situation, but how we interpret things, how our belief system is, the consequences also differs. So this is what it is talking about. And then D, dispute. So after realizing this, you know, the activating event, then belief system, consequences, then you dispute your belief system. I want to get even with him. I want to punch him. Your reason is, if I punch him or if I retort, I will be viewed, you know, brave or whatever it is. I won't be looked down by others as a coward. So is that really the case? So you dispute your logic, your reasoning, your belief system. And then if there is a rational thing, if it is rational, then you can continue. If it is not rational, that's when you change. You apply a break. So that is why we do meditation, especially mindfulness meditation. Mindfulness meditation is not just sitting in front of a statue and just keeping your eyes closed. Mindfulness meditation you can do all the time. All the time mindful of your actions, your physical actions, your mental, your verbal. So if you are all the time watchful of your thoughts and your actions, then you will be able to do this, A, B, C, and then you will be able to dispute that that flow, that process, and then you will be able to apply break. Oh, that's wrong logic, that's wrong thinking, that's wrong belief. I should not do that. So that's about ABCD model. And this you can apply in any cases. You can use that, doesn't have to be a spiritual practice. Anything dealing with people, whatever it is, you can use that. So the main point is that external events are not the determinants of one's emotions and behaviors. It is inevitable. We cannot escape from adversities. These are part and parcel of our life, our existence. We are bound to experience all kinds of difficulties, all kinds of situations. But these are not the determinant. Whether it destroys your peace of mind is completely upon you, dependent upon you, contingent on our interpretation. Remember, most of the time we always try to change the external factors, external events. That's why we chase after money, chase after fame, chase after name, all this, because we believe that through these material positions we can change our environment and then we will be happy. But we know that that is not the case. So what can determine, what determines is our interpretation, our belief system. So it's all here. If you have a positive attitude in any situation, then it will be different. Normally you have this half-filled glass and half-empty glass. Same person just views half a glass of water. One person says, oh, mine is half-filled. It's only, what was that? Half-filled? How do you explain that?
Half-full.
Half-full and half empty. Yeah, one view says half empty. So emphasis on empty. What is lacking? What is not there? Other one is what you have. Oh, I have half. I have half a glass or something else. It's same thing, same amount, same quantity, whatever it is. But how you look at things is completely different. One is happy, one is dissatisfied. That's the main point here. And why this is happening is because of the relationships. There's this relationship between thoughts, feelings, and behavior. So your thoughts give rise to our feelings, how we feel about emotions. And then with our emotions give rise to our action, our reaction to all these things. So because of this loop, this chain of events, So it is important to make changes. Make changes in, is it? In belief system. In. Yeah, so this I thought that I'll just share with you, and maybe you will find it useful. So now when we talk about belief system, so in cognitive psychology or cognitive theory, so there's a famous guy who came up with cognitive therapy called Aaron Beck. He came up with some of the illogical, common illogical, or what do you call it, logical errors or faulty thinking. Arbitrary inference. This is a very common one. Drawing a negative conclusions in the absence of supporting data. I think the best example is today when I see that not many people here, I'll say, maybe people don't like my teaching. Or they, I'm not a good teacher. Not taking into other accounts. I don't have the sufficient evidence to support, to corroborate my conclusion. But I'm already jumping into conclusion. Is it jumping to conclusion. I'm jumping to conclusion. And I remember when we were taught this, I think the example, I think one lecturer gave example. That was, I thought it was very good. So of course, young people, they would say, when you agreed to meet your boyfriend or girlfriend at a restaurant at certain time, and then the girlfriend or boyfriend didn't show up. Suddenly you're thinking, or he or she must be, with somebody else, doesn't love me, or is having some other things. That's how we do. That's why you get so angry and so upset over this. We fail to consider other situations, factor in other possibilities. So that's what we call arbitrary inference. We all do that. We all do that. So now that you know this, when this kind of conclusion, you realize that you are making these conclusions, so you have to go back, dispute. That's how ABCD works. So when you are doing this kind of situation, arbitrary inference, then you dispute your thinking. What evidence do I have to make this conclusion? Or maybe he or she has some emergency. Maybe, couldn't message you because it's out of, out of
range.
Yeah, out of the network range. Yeah, you can come up with all kinds of explanations, but we just focus on one thing. So that's called arbitrary inference. Then another inference is selective abstraction. Selective focusing on the worst aspects of any situation is forming conclusion based on an isolated detail of an event. So this is, you are very selective. You do well in something else, but you kind of neglect that. But you focus on something that, and then, it's, that I am so bad, I failed in this, I am a terrible person. Let's say if you give, one time you give a public speech, and then, it didn't go well. And then since then, you say, I am terrible, I'm always, I will never be able to give a public talk. I will always embarrass myself. So that kind of very, just focusing on one thing and then make it the worst of it. This is similar to the first one, magnification and minimization. If they have a problem, they make it appear bigger than it is. If they have a solution, they make it smaller. So you are good at something, but you will kind of minimize that. You will undermine that quality. But instead, so it's like if you got C in one subject and you got A in other 9 subjects, but you will only focus on that subject that you got C, and there's, oh, you know, I am a horrible student, or I better quit this course, I can never pass, I'm bad at my education, I'm not good at all this. But you're completely ignoring that, you know, 9 subjects that you scored A, but you're only focusing on one. So it's magnifying that. Then negative events are interpreted as their fault. Yeah, you have see, I think you may have come across some people that sometimes it is not your fault at all, but you somehow make that your fault. Oh, I shouldn't have done that because of that, you know. Oh, now, you know, they are going through this problem. That's one. And another is personalization is whatever person does, and you interpret that as personal, or because he doesn't like me, or because of that he's doing that, he did that. Even if you, let's say, if you go to a market and if you come across somebody whom you know the person, but the person, let's say, didn't see you. And then suddenly you say, oh, you know, he doesn't like me, or she doesn't like me. That's why he just ignored me. But the person may not have seen you. So whatever the person says, some people, yeah, whatever you say in a meeting, whatever it is, everything is taken personal. He is saying this to me because you have some disagreement before. So whatever the other person says, you take it personal. He is saying this to me. He is saying that to me. So that kind of, does it happen to you? I think it's common. Many people have this. Of course, you had some dispute with the person, and then, you know, you have to, whatever the person does, you interpret as he is doing to you, and you are excluding, or you are not taking into account that it may not be personal at all. So that kind of thinking is called personalization. Then dichotomous thinking. This is what is sometimes called as black and white, all or nothing. Sometimes called as polarized thinking. Either it has to be perfect or I am a horrible person. That's very dangerous. That's when we have all kinds of mental disorder, especially those eating disorders. What are the two? There are two.
Bulimia
and anorexia. Yeah, these two. Because that is coming from perfectionist. You want it to be perfect in everything. And it is not going to be perfect in everything. Remember, we have already talked about we are in imperfect world. You cannot expect that. But when you have that kind of thinking, rigid, what happens is you expect you to be perfect in everything. Then when it doesn't happen, you go into depression. Everything is seen in either or, just black and white. It has to be either he is a good person or he is a horrible person. So there are no in-betweens. That kind of thinking. That's actually very unreasonable. We can know that. We do that. Yes, it is very funny. Many times it happens. This is not to this point. Do you have any? Do you remember any incidents where you are in that situation?
Oh, every day with Donald Trump. Everything he does and says, I look for the bad part of it. And then, I have to fight that.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. So just now, so sometimes, you know, when, yeah, maybe I better not talk that later. And then there's something called overgeneralization, making general conclusions based on one incident. So that's actually more like the first one, where you have one incident and then you say, oh, you know, I am bad. Like you fail at one relationship and then, yeah, you no longer want to be, no longer want to even try because you think that you are terrible at, terrible when it comes to relationships. So we do that. And one of the example is, let's say if you go for a job interview and then if you don't get selected and then you kind of give up, oh, I am never going to succeed in getting a job. I am not worthy of, you know, any of this. So there is a quote, I thought this is quite good. If we don't get what we were hoping for, we sometimes turn inward and blame ourselves. But is this really the thing to do? For example, if I were James Taylor and someone were looking for Pavarotti, is it? Then naturally I wouldn't be chosen. But this doesn't mean I lack musical talent. It means only that I am not the right match. So be more confident and please stop beating yourself up. So this comes from, I won't say this comes from. So in relation to this, there's something called in psychology, learned helplessness. When you repeatedly fail and then you started to learn helplessness, oh, I'm no good, I will never succeed. So this, the phrase came or coined by this Martin Seligman, who is the father of positive psychology. He was actually doing other research and he put the dog in a cage and electric shock. So he has put one dog here and then one dog here. And there is actually a hole for the dog to get out. So when the dog was kept in a close in a cage, and then the shock was, he was shocked repeatedly, and in one cage there was no way to get out. And he tries to get out, but there's no way to get out. And he, after giving repeated shocks, the dog just gave up. And then later, when that dog was put into another cage with a hole to get out, he never tries to get out. He just stays there. Whereas if you put another dog, a dog that was not exposed to these repeated shocks, and the minute the dog feels the shock, look for escape, and then jumps out of the cage. Whereas those dogs which were repeatedly shocked and there was no escape, even later when there is an escape, doesn't do that. So that's how he learned that, oh, this is called learned helplessness. You have learned being helpless. So that happens all the time. People go to apply for a job one time, two times, three times, then say, oh, I'm never going to get it. I'm never going to try. That's learned helplessness. And if you stop there, it's okay. And then people interpret that interpret that into one's, failure. Or I am a terrible person. I am a loser. I am a failure. That's when you get into depression. So all this leads to self-compassion. It is very common, I think especially in the West, to berate oneself, self-criticism. Criticize yourself and beating yourself.
Beating yourself up.
So all the time, you know, telling yourself that you are not good, you know, you should be better than this. So that's why the self-compassion came about. And obviously, it is very effective in helping people with that kind of condition. So the self-compassion was coined by Christine Neff. And according to her, it is to substitute self-esteem. I think in the West, self-esteem is so important. People put so much emphasis on self-esteem, especially parents. They don't want to hurt their children's self-esteem. So always trying to protect that. So Kristen Neff was saying that there is danger to that. So self-esteem is evaluation of self-worth. How much worth one is. It is an evaluation. So you look at yourself and then say, oh, am I good or am I not? Am I worthy or not? So this is based on judgment and comparison. So you have to judge yourself whether you are worthy of something or not. And not only that, you need to compare with others as well. So when it comes to judgment or evaluation, you tell yourself how good you are. So there is a standard kind of a scale there, and you kind of compare yourself whether you are at that range. And then if you find that you are at that range, then you feel yourself happy. And then another thing is looking for others. Looking to others' evaluations of self. How much do others like me? That is also very dangerous. That's why we have all kinds of social pressure, peer pressure. Many of the young people do all kinds of things just to please their peers. Just to be liked by your peers. And then the worst is social comparison. So self-esteem is all the time comparing yourself with others. So when you do that, there is a danger. So there is always somebody above you to compare. So today it will be John. And next time it will be Mary or something else to compare with. So there is no end. And if you have this kind of notion or perception of thinking that in order to feel worthy of yourself, I have to be better than all of that people, there's no end. There's no end. And that's why people go into depression. And according to her, she says the overemphasis on enhancing self-esteem or self-liking may lead to narcissism. We know the best example. And then become self-absorbed. Everything is about me. And then, of course, self-centeredness. And because of this narcissistic view, you have no concern for others. You don't care. It is all about me. That's very dangerous. And then the worst part is distortion in self-knowledge. You think you know everything. you think that you don't need to rely on daily briefing. Isn't it? And then because you have to compete with others, you are willing to see the worst in others. Because you want others to do badly so that you will rise up. That kind of thinking is terrible. And then inflated sense of self-esteem. I have come across, I looked for this clip, but I couldn't find it again. You know these talent shows? I like to watch those talent shows. And people will come there and they really think that they had the best voice. And their parents come along to encourage and to support. And when you listen to their singing, it's like, really? This is because of this. Parents are so scared to tell them the truth that you don't have the ability. They are so worried that it will break or destroy their self-esteem. So they just play along. And they really have this inflated sense of self-esteem. They think that they are really good. Let me give you an example. I couldn't find what I wanted, but this will make, I think, do the help to make me make my point.
Two, one.
Too loud.
Hello.
Too loud. I cannot control from here.
It's just the volume. It's the volume.
I think you better pass to
Anthony.
All the way up.
Okay.
What's your name?
My name's Sophie Stalker.
Okay, and Sophie, where are you from?
Hartlepool.
And Sophie, is this your first audition?
Yeah, in front of it like this, yeah.
Okay. And who's with you today?
My mum, my dad, and my auntie.
And are they supportive?
Yeah, very supportive.
Okay. Okay. What's your song?
Look Who I Do by Jennifer Hudson.
Okay.
Nicole. Well, let me start off by saying you, Sophie, are a beautiful girl.
Thank you.
I'm not going to lie, you have power and projection. Unfortunately, we were missing the pitch and the tone. Yeah, you need all of those things.
I want to try and be encouraging, but it was vocally really, really bad. Sophie, it's a no for me.
Okay.
I'm going to have to say no right now.
Talisa?
It's a no for me.
Before no, I'm sorry.
Child, I would say, stop it. I think we've made a wrong call, but our folks have done really well, you know.
Sorry, good
work. All right, then. That's fine, yeah.
Sorry, I have to put you through this.
Gonna make a change for once in my life.
Hello. What's your name?
My name's Onkar Judge.
Okay, why are you here, Onkar?
Because I believe I've got what it takes to wait the X Factor.
Are you going to win?
Yes, I am.
Good. Who are you as good as?
Michael Jackson, Daniel Bedingfield, George Michael.
All right.
All right. Here I go then. What have we done to the world? Look what we've done. What about all the...
Okay, I won't put you to this bit. Yeah, but he really thinks that he is equal to Michael Jackson and all that. So that's the, I see that as a danger. Sometimes you have to be direct and honest with your child or children. I don't know whether you have read this book, The Tiger Mom, by this Amy Chua, who is a professor at Stanford University. So she did a comparison between Asian parenting and how she raised her kids and how Western parents raise their kids. So there was a funny line. It says that the Western parents, if a child kicks a ball, they will go, wow, well done, it's so good, all this. It doesn't have to score a goal. But the way she was brought up, she was raised, and the way she was raising her two kids is like, wow. Even on Sundays, they have to wake up at 6 a.m. to play violin. And hours after hours. And I think I mentioned this. So normally we say that I have done a kind of a review on this parenting style. So there are four parenting styles here. Authoritarian, authoritative, neglecting, is it? And then permissive parenting. Four styles of parenting. Four parenting styles. So normally they compare with authoritarian and authoritative. So authoritarian is, since you are living under my roof, whatever I say is go. Whatever I say goes. There's no reason you have to do it because you are under this roof. So that's mostly Asian kind of parenting. And then authoritarian. Authoritative is really reasoning and explaining. And one time, that's very good actually. So you give the child opportunity to ask questions and you patiently answer them. Each and every, but when the child does something wrong, of course, you will stand firm. And one time when I was in Whole Food, they also sell food. So I was eating, and then there was this a father and son. I think the boy must be like 2 or 3 years old. It's really small. And after they finished, I was watching them. They finished the. Whatever they are eating. And then, father went to throw those plates in the bin. And the child called after him to say, throw that in there. And he came back and spent another, 1 minute or two, explaining to that baby why he cannot throw that in there. It is all about, there are three types. There one is recycling, another is this one. I was like, wow! Our parents wouldn't even bother to explain that. if you try to touch something hot on the table, smack, you will get a smack on your hand. Don't touch. There's no explanation. Whereas I think the authoritative parenting will explain, you cannot touch here because it will burn you and all this. This is very good. But the general, the research findings show that if you are brought up with the authoritarian parenting style, there is a lot of detrimental effect in the future. In terms of academic performance, they said it's really detrimental. So I looked into research. And interesting thing is, those children in the West who are brought up with the authoritarian parenting style, they all have detrimental effect. Whereas those in the Asian country, those who are brought up with authoritarian, mostly authoritarian, there's no detrimental effect. The question is why? Why is the difference? It is all because Asian, is back to our this interpretation. Asian kids interpret their parenting strictness as a gesture of parents' love and care, parents' affection. They interpret that they are doing this for our future good. Whereas in the West, I think that, oh, it's an exploitation of my rights, infringing into my rights and all that kind of thing. I have the right to be this and that. So it's all here, you see. Interpretation. Same kind of treatment, but because one interpret in that way, there's no detrimental effect. Another interpret in that way, there is detrimental effect. So that's this danger of, you know, all the time enhancing self-esteem is the danger. So she suggests that instead of trying to enhance self-esteem, we should try to cultivate self-compassion. So what is self-compassion? I think it's already time for break. We will stop here and then we will continue. Compassion. So self-compassion, so this I am quoting from her paper. It says, self-compassion, therefore, involves being touched by and open to one's own suffering. First, you have to see your suffering. You have to accept. And then, instead of avoiding, you have to really see your problems or your sufferings. Not avoiding or disconnecting from it, generating the desire to elevate one's suffering and to heal oneself with kindness. So this is similar to compassion for others. So when we generate compassion for others, first we need to perceive other people's suffering, what they are suffering. We need to recognize that. We need to acknowledge that. And then upon recognizing the suffering, then we generate this desire to elevate, or what is the other word? Ameliorate, is it?
Ameliorate
is to reduce, isn't it? Ameliorate their suffering.
Not am I tolerating it?
No, ameliorate is to
to
counter.
To
reduce.
Oh, so I'm using it the wrong way?
No, it's correct.
Oh, correct. Okay, ameliorating. Okay, yeah. So first you need to recognize the suffering of other persons, and then. Yeah, you generate this desire to elevate that suffering. So likewise, in compassion, instead of, you know, directing that towards others, we direct it to ourselves. We first acknowledge our own suffering, what we are suffering, and then we generate this desire to elevate that. And then, yeah, being kind. So normally when we see our shortcomings, our flaws, we berate ourselves, we criticize ourselves, we really hammer onto us, oh, I'm a loser, you know, I will never get it right, all that. So continuously doing that will result in depression and all that. So that is the main thing, to be kind to ourselves. It says that when we see another person suffering or, you know, making mistakes, all this, we won't be so harsh on them. We'll say, oh, it's okay, you know, it happens, we are not perfect, you know, it's all this. But when it happens to us, we are not so forgiving. We always scold ourselves. We always hold this standard that we have to be in a certain way. So when we fall short of that, then yeah, we self-criticize. And this is very dangerous. So self-criticism eventually leads to self-harm and then even suicide. There are so many cases of suicide. And then self-harm, I was surprised to learn that people just cut themselves. And then self-hate or self-loathing. So since these are very common, so that's why this to encounter this, we have this something called self-compassion.
Can I ask you, when you said, are you saying elevate or alleviate?
Alleviate, to reduce.
Okay, you said
elevate. Elevate, of course,
yes.
To alleviate.
He said ameliorate.
ameliorate. Self-compassion also involves offering non-judgmental understanding of one's pain, inadequacies, and failure. So this is the main point. Self-compassion, basically, you are acknowledging that, you know, you have these problems and you are not judging, you are suspending your judgment. And that, so that one's experience is seen as part of the larger human experience. This is what I like about self-compassion. Normally, when we go through a problem, we always think that I am the only one going through this. We completely forget that other people also go through this kind of problem. We never think that. So when we are able to, what do you call it, this, expand this understanding that, oh, I am not alone. Everybody goes through this kind of problem, one way or another, or just, you know, at different times. And then, yeah, you kind of, the grip that kind of relaxes, loosens that grip, and then, yeah, you no longer feel that strongly. So self-compassion, there are three components. The first is self-kindness, that you have to, instead of berating yourself, instead of beating yourself up, you have to acknowledge that, you know, these are a part and parcel of our existence. You will every now and then encounter this kind of shortfalls or shortcomings. And then common humanity is that I am not the only one going through these kind of difficulties. Others also go through that. This is a common humanity, is a common thing that all human beings go through. And then mindfulness is where you, when things go wrong, instead of, you know, when you are going to berate yourself, when you are going to criticize yourself, then be mindful that, you know, this is part and parcel. And then, yeah, instead of treating yourself harshly, you treat yourself kindly. So that's basically about self-compassion. Extending kindness and understanding to oneself rather than harsh judgment and self-criticism. That's the first component, self-kindness. And then common humanity is seeking one's experiences as part of the larger human experience rather than seeing them as separating and isolating. And then mindfulness, holding one's painful thoughts and feelings in balanced awareness rather than over-identifying with them. So we tend to over-identify with our shortcomings. So if you fail at something, you would say, oh, I am a failure. when you are unsuccessful with something else, oh, I am a loser. Then when you find that you did something wrong, oh, I am a horrible person. So we always identify with our shortcomings. So that is not the truth. That is not true. You have other so many qualities. So you will also engage in good kind actions. So you are a good person. So you cannot be, you know, both horrible person at the same time a kind and good person, good-hearted person. So that's the meaning. That's the point. To be mindful of your thought process, how you evaluate yourself. So this is about self-compassion. So now we are going to do meditation. This is a guided meditation. I don't know about self-compassion meditation, but I found a guided meditation by Kristin Neff herself. So we will all try and see how it feels. Ready?
Meditation is a variant on.
So you can make this loud. We'll increase the volume a bit. Excuse me. And try this, and then we will discuss.
Tailored specifically to cultivate self-compassion. So first, make sure you are in a comfortable sitting, either on a meditation cushion or on a chair, something very comfortable where you can sit upright and yet relaxed. And settle into your posture. Notice how your body feels. The sensation of your feet touching the floor, your bottom touching the cushion, the weight of the arms, your head. Be in your body right here, right now, fully inhabiting your lived experience. Allow your attention to move outward to sounds. What sounds are arising right now? Are there noises outside your window? A fan blowing? Leaves rustling? What sounds do you hear? Try not to reach out to the sounds, but just let the sounds arrive. The sound waves entering your mind and body. Now focus on your breathing. The sense of inhaling and exhaling. Whether you feel the breath most strongly at your nostrils, or perhaps as your chest rises and falls. We'll take a few moments just to rest with our breath. Simple and easy.
notice the peacefulness of being quiet, of resting, as you just gently breathe. Now I'd like you to bring to mind some aspect of your personality or perhaps some mistake you made, a failure that has been bothering you lately. Something that perhaps you've been criticizing yourself for or that has made you feel inadequate in some way. Whatever this trait or action is, try to get in touch with your feelings about it. What does it make you feel? Sad? Frightened? Isolated? Inadequate? How have you felt when you've thought about this inadequacy? See if you can locate the sensations of the emotions in your body. Perhaps it's a tightness in your throat, a heaviness in your heart. Tension in the shoulders. What emotions do you feel when you think about this mistake or inadequacy, and where are those emotions felt in the body? Just actually allow them to be there instead of resisting feeling these natural feelings that arise when we judge ourselves. Just notice them. What am I feeling? Where are the emotions in my body? Get in touch with how much suffering is caused by our self-judgment, our fears of not being good enough. Some of our greatest suffering is caused at our own hands by the belief that somehow we should be perfect. Take your hand, or both hands if you prefer, and place it gently over your heart in a calm, soft, comforting manner. You might even want to rub a little soothing, reassuring circle. See if you can sense your heart right now. See if you can let your heart be moved by how difficult your emotional experience is when you think about this thing that makes you feel bad about yourself. And so what we'll do now is repeat some phrases, loving kindness phrases designed to help you feel compassion for the fact that you're an imperfect being. You try your best, but no one on this planet is perfect. We're all inadequate in some way. We all make mistakes. We all fail. This is a human experience. It's okay. So repeat the phrases silently. I'll say a few sets of phrases aloud, and then you can repeat them silently. May I be safe. May I be peaceful. May I be kind to myself. May I accept myself as I am. feeling the warmth of your hand on your heart. May I be safe. May I be peaceful. May I be kind to myself. May I accept myself as I am. So repeat these phrases silently, really trying to get in touch with the intention behind the words, the intention to offer yourself kindness, compassion, acceptance. As your mind wanders, which it will inevitably do, just refresh the phrases in your mind. May I be safe. May I be peaceful. May I be kind to myself. May I accept myself as I am. Giving yourself the same kindness and support and acceptance you would give to a good friend who is feeling bad about themselves. May I be safe. May I be peaceful. May I be kind to myself. May I accept myself as I am. Remembering that everyone is in the same boat, everyone feels inadequate in some way, everyone makes mistakes, everyone fails. This is a human condition. This is normal. This is something we all share. It's okay. May I be safe. May I be peaceful. May I be kind to myself. May I accept myself as I am. and remembering all your fellow humans who struggle with self-judgment the way you do. Let's change the phrases slightly so that we include everyone in our intention for self-compassion. May we all feel safe. May we all be peaceful. May we be kind to ourselves. And may we accept ourselves as we are. May we be safe. May we be peaceful. May we be kind to ourselves. May we accept ourselves as we are. Just gently repeating the phrases silently. I'd like you to think of something that's been causing you suffering that you don't necessarily blame yourself for. Maybe you have a loved one who is sick, or something's going wrong in your life just due to external circumstances. Something that's very hard to bear, hard to deal with. And also give yourself compassion for this source of suffering. Our suffering comes from two main sources, from ourselves not being as we want, or from our lives not being as we want. So thinking of this aspect of your life that's causing you pain, repeat the following phrases. May I be safe. May I be peaceful. May I be kind to myself. And may I accept my life as it is. This is the way things are. May I be safe. May I be peaceful. May I be kind to myself. May I accept my life as it is. Repeating the phrases silently to yourself, soothing and comforting yourself for the difficulties of living a human life. Really feel your caring concern, tenderness for yourself, struggling like so many others. May I be safe. May I be peaceful. May I be kind to myself. May I accept my life as it is. again, put your hand on your heart, or if it's been there the whole time, really feel your hand on your heart. And while we've been focusing on comforting ourselves for painful feelings, for suffering, now see if you can feel what the compassion itself feels like. Maybe your heart is tingling or feels warm. Feels vibrant in some way. Notice the good qualities of an open heart that's filled with compassion. The beautiful feelings of tenderness, care, concern, kindness. Noticing the joy of compassion, of connectedness, of open-heartedness. This also was part of the human experience. And thank yourself for being a good supportive friend. May we all be well and safe, happy and free.
Obviously, it ended here. How was it? Anybody want to share? Let's de-stress. Look out for this last one, yeah? Last boy. Can we relate to this? This girl was fidgeting, and then he is really trying his best to keep awake. That's what happens, isn't it, when we do meditation? Either our minds get distracted or we feel sleepy. So how was the self-compassion meditation? What do you say about this? Is it relatable?
Yeah, I think it's very important because even though the teachings say that, and most of the teachings that I've learned from say you should start with compassion for yourself, there's this tendency to gloss over this. And if you don't feel compassion for yourself, it's difficult to feel it for someone else. I mean, I know, don't want to feel compassion for themselves, they want to send it out to everybody else, but I'm not sure that you can really fully do that if you don't feel compassion for yourself. So I think that's the important place to start.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not claiming that I'm very good at it, but I know that's where you should start.
Okay. Anybody?
I was doing a group Vajrasattva retreat, and you know, at the beginning of the retreat, we're all so focused on thinking of our negativities to purify. But all as Westerners, what that all led us to in the group was all being very depressed and just being really hard on ourselves. So I remember that was a big thing throughout the retreat, that we had to have compassion for ourselves first.
Okay.
Thich Nhat Hanh, the Vietnamese teacher, suggests something that I find very, very useful, and is to find a picture, a photograph of ourselves as a small child, and find one that where we can relate to, and then direct that to, you know, to ourselves, because, you know, that's where the feelings are. It's like this that ego state, you know, that's one way of thinking about it. And I find it very, very useful. And I have a little pigtail, 5-year-old photograph of myself in my meditation room. I don't think of it very often, but because it's habituated, but that's what he suggests, and I just want to pass it on.
Anybody? Now let me tell you my view on this. Yeah, when I first heard this term, I was like, what is this? Self-compassion? Because we never have this term in Tibetan. Compassion is always other-oriented, other-directed. There's never really, you know, compassion for yourself. So when I was there, I was like completely like, what is this self-compassion? I couldn't really accept that. And later I learned that when His Holiness was introduced this, His Holiness asked the same question. What is self-compassion, you know? Yeah. But I see that, you know, it is very popular. And there are so many research showing positive effect. So this is all based on this is kind of an antidote to self-loathing, self-hatred. But of course, I'm just sharing here, but I may be, you know, beaten if I go out to say this loud. They will think that I am unempathic and all that. But the question is there really self-hate, self-loathing? The question is, what is underlying that self-load? There is self-attachment, self-love. You hate yourself because you love so much. You love yourself so much. I always have this argument. If somebody who thinks that they really hate themselves, if that is the case, if somebody appears and hurl a very nasty name-calling or whatever, something, you know, nasty things, say nasty things at that person. That's the testing when the person really hates that, hates oneself. If the person really hates oneself, he will be happy that, you know, somebody is berating that self. Because you hate so much. Let's say if there is an enemy, somebody else, you know, berate that enemy, I will be happy because I hate that person. But if you hate so much, if somebody says some nasty things, you should be rejoicing. You should be happy. But no, we will fight back. We will punch that person. That shows you love yourself.
Although they might just go kill themselves.
Yeah, that one also, what is the underlying, you see? Underlying reason for committing suicide, all this. Because you wanted yourself to be perfect. So you cannot stand that. It is actually love for yourself. So sometimes, I don't know whether, you know, doing all this all the time and all this, whether we are stroking our ego, whether we are increasing our attachment to oneself, then it is bad. Because compassion is all about self-cherishing, remember? When we talk about bodhicitta and compassion, we always contemplate on the negativities of self-cherishing thought. Self-cherishing is the one that is the root of our problems. So we have to counter self-cherishing thought. And in its place, we try to develop other cherishing. Thought of other cherishing. So I don't know where this self-compassion comes. But of course, as a temporary measure, it is understandable.
Isn't there self-compassion in Tonglen? When you first start learning how to do Tonglen, it seems like there's, at least often taught us, there is start with yourself and then move on to others.
Mm. How do you do Tonglen to sell yourself?
It's sort of like the self-compassion.
Mm.
You know.
Mm.
So the same as for others.
Mm.
You breathe in.
I mean, the normal Tonglen practice is you give out your merits or your happiness and your joys to others. You take upon others' sufferings. That is the main practice. So you give out your love. Normally it says that first you give out and then take upon yourself others' pain and suffering. It's like, may I experience the other people's suffering. May I take upon others' suffering and difficulties. May I be able to, you know, may they have my happiness and joy. That's the core practice.
So I guess I would say that my understanding is that the difference in self-compassion and other compassion is that self-compassion is an acceptance of oneself. And, you know, you're talking about grasping at self
being
the problem. So self-compassion is a self-acceptance. You allow yourself to let go of the grasping. And that which it is that you're clinging to that makes you unhappy.
Yeah, of course, if people do that, it's very good. But there is also this danger, which, may I be happy, may I be all this, may I be, it's all about I. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you are not letting go of yourself. You are instead, you know, I. Even when you say this, may I be happy, may I be peaceful, don't you find it awkward? Because we are used to saying all sentient beings. The second part is okay. May we be happy. You are including everybody. But when you just focus on yourself, may I be happy, may I be peaceful, may I have no difficulty, it's all about I. So that, I don't know whether it kind of pouring a gasoline to your ego to boost that up. Fire and gasoline, yeah.
I know at some point I just shifted to seeing the Buddha. In this case, it was Medicine Buddha, and I just ignore what she was saying, and I just, you know, was radiating and that sort of thing, and
yeah.
I just that's what happened.
Yes, so that's good, because this, of course, is secular version, so we can always, when we say, even when we say, may we be happy, we can visualize a Buddha or Medicine Buddha or any Buddha, and then we can add that visualization where we receive rays of light and nectar, and then we receive the blessing or cleanse of inactivities. We can do that. But this is based on pure secular version. So you cannot bring that in.
Part of hers, she was saying, and that's what that is, because if you get some of the other meditation of the Buddha, and you know, when you take the refuge, you see everyone there.
Yes.
It's like we all of this, you know, and that's part of Neff's, last part, that this is part of, you know, in this existence, and we're, you know, so it's not just, you know, give me this and give me that and, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's more like, oh, I'm one of them, and it's like part of it is that some of the practitioners, they talk about, you know, if you have a situation, think about all the other ones of the same situation. And just
yeah, that's the reasoning, well, isn't it? You know? That's the reasoning, where you say that you don't have to feel so bad about all this because we are part of the human community and everybody experiences this. So this is like reasoning, you are analyzing, you are reasoning that there's no reason to feel that way. Because you are not the only one.
So there's another aspect to this. I'm sorry.
Debate.
It's also that there are a lot of people out there who don't have they're swept away with the suffering, and that's why we send it out.
Yeah.
Because they don't have the ability.
If you are including that sending out, it is very good. That is bodhicitta practice. That is compassion practice. But if you're only getting to you, that's the problem, what I'm saying.
But I think this is broader than that. That's why I think it's important, because if you're in pain and you're suffering and you're feeling unworthy and unable or whatever it is, you know, feeling like a failure or any of that sort of thing, then you're not going to be going to be very difficult for you to give anything to anyone else. You know, you have to give yourself some relief in order to be able to be a benefit to others. That is certainly an altruistic motivation for self-compassion. You know, I think that makes it a constructive thing. If, as you say, it's I need to get what I want. You know, I hurt so much, poor me. But I think it's very limited in its benefit. But if it's a broader thing than that, then I think it's constructive.
Yeah, I agree with you. It all depends on your motivation. You see, if you are doing this because I need to cultivate compassion for others, for that, first I need to cultivate compassion for myself. That's why I am doing this. That's completely different. But if you just go in like this, oh, may I be happy, may I be peaceful, that's the problem. No, what I'm saying is that is my view. But you see, if there's another term for this, like self-kindness, that's perfectly fine. But calling that compassion is the difficulty I have. But I, my, this, the whatever reason, same is completely, you know, what do you call, nonsense, could be completely nonsense. But for me, if it's something like self-kindness, I would be more accepting. When you use the compassion, that is the one that I am finding odds with. That's just my, I'm sharing. So I think we better conclude here.
So begin with the short mandala offering, first verse on page 4, and then the concluding prayers.
Saji Poki Joshin
Medo Damare Ralinje Nyende Gembande Sanje Shindo Mede Buaye Logun Namda Shinla Chubara Sho Rana Mandala Ganaya Taya Me Rimboje Maje Panamake Goje Keva Nyamba Meva Kone Gondo Bewa Jo Rabdenje Namgaratile Jojo Geva Dan Lozan Tembe Dume Sazum Jove Muse Dado Ne Gyoroje Korve Jengamzo Pendan Tewa Malu Jung Chenren Senwan Tenzin Gyanzo Yi Shabe Sede Pado Ten Gyoroje Chedara Kenpa Tang Kundo Sambo Teyan Tenshin Teda Kwenje Chesu Talo Chi Gyawa Teda Tam Rabdo Ngo Tu Shebe Gyawa Tamche Ki Ngowa Kala Chodo Ngaba Taji Gyewe Tawa Degwen Gyan Sambo Chuchi Rabdo Ngowa Gyan